Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Welcome, welcome, Newsbusters listeners. It's Nick Night Train Fondacaro and newly minted early bird Curtis Houck filling in for Tim Graham on this, the last NV podcast before Christmas arrives. You and I are manning the skeleton crew here mostly at Newsbusters until Christmas and New Year's, Curtis. What's this week looking like for you? Have any fun plans to defy the edicts of the COVID crazies and celebrate Christmas?
Well, we'll see. I mean, as you mentioned right off the top, this is my first morning shift here. I was here just after 7:45 in the morning, and it's amazing what you can get done when it's a quiet office in the morning. After you've just gotten up, like, it's night when you're ready to go to bed, your day's only just begun. So it's been a lot of fun here on day one, and I look forward to bringing all of you more from the networks, Morning Joe, late night comedy shows, and whatever else piques my interest.
Very good. You'll still also be getting us occasionally the Saki Show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I tweeted out videos from today's episode of the Saki Show. As of now, when we're recording, I'm not sure if I'll be doing a story, but... have no fear, folks. I will still be covering the Saki Show as long as it's not at, like, you know, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 4 o'clock, something like that.
And with sort of my new schedule of moving in, coming in a little bit earlier, I was some people were asking me, what am I going to do with all the Fredo news? But luckily, he's no longer around anymore.
He's gone. And you have to find something else to do.
And I put together a little package for us this year. It's one of my favorite things to do every year. Our top Fredo moments of the year. We'll be getting to that a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But first, speaking of the COVID crazies, last night on NBC Nightly News, you had Lester Holt there speaking with Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy. And he was... Holt specifically was very nervous about Omicron, but not about, like, how dangerous it is, how fast it spreads. We know it has those mild symptoms, and what he was worried about was that those mild symptoms would mean that it wasn't scary enough to keep people locked away in their homes for months on end. He even asked the Surgeon General about that, and we're going to play a clip here in a little bit where Holt was asking Murthy about the mild symptoms and were they worried that people would be able to go about their lives as normal and not actually fear it. He then asked Murthy to use his position as the Surgeon General to recommend people that they would self-lockdown since cities weren't imposing their own lockdowns. So let's take a listen.
If you come up from a test and get a positive result, what should you do? Especially, let's assume you don't have any symptoms. What should you do? Do you fear that people will take that as a license to go forward with their life knowing that they're infected? We're seeing some cities take measures to protect their populations from this particular variant, but nothing in the way of lockdowns. As a health professional, as someone who's committed to protecting the health of the American people, would you recommend that we self-lockdown, that we begin to change our lifestyle and dial back on all fronts?
So if what you'll notice in that clip is you had Holt literally holding Murthy's position over his head, saying, you as a health official whose job it is to care about the health and the lives of other people, would you tell them to lock down, self-lockdown, that we begin to change our lifestyles, dial back on all fronts? This is what I coined last year, a little over a year ago, that NBC in particular takes part in, which is despair porn, where they push for these lockdowns, shut down the economy, make people sequester away in their homes, no contact with family, friends, the outside world, lose their jobs, lose their incomes, and then they will flood their programs night after night with, look at the long lines at the food pantries of people who don't have the money to go grocery shopping. Look at all these statistics of students and other people suffering mental health crises and people needing to see help and professionals because they're depressed, lonely, they're feeling extreme isolation, the people who, or the students of school who are getting left behind developmentally, are losing years in education. They want, that they're pushing for these lockdowns and creating that, and then like gushing at it, gawking at the results, almost like they're stepping back and looking at their handiwork. And it's absolutely disgusting. And NBC is clearly, Holt here is clearly itching to go back to more of this. This is something that I have been all over last year and this year. Clearly they want to go back to it now. And Holt is very much just wants them to go back to these lockdowns. And so they have more of this content. Like, why else would you be worried that the mild symptoms, why would you treat the mild symptoms as a bad thing? Mm-hmm. Curtis?
Yeah, I think just real quick here, I will note that CBS Mornings had a piece, you know, two pieces on this note here, which was, you know, they expressed support for NBA Commissioner Adam Silver deciding that we shouldn't shut down the season.
COVID is taking a toll on the NBA, but there are no plans to stop the basketball season. Commissioner Adam Silver says games will go on even though seven have been postponed this month and more could be called off. Silver says he and other NBA executives have been having trouble finding the logic in pausing play. He says we have to learn to live with the virus. Silver spoke out after more than 100 players and coaches entered the league's health and safety protocols. The NBA says it has a contingency plan in case something happens, but we don't know what that plan is.
Mm. I'm with Adam Silver.
We are learning to learn, right? I mean, it's happening.
And all the hosts at the table were like, oh my gosh, fantastic idea. Amazing, yes. Amazing idea. And then they also did a segment with the psychologist where they're like, you know, students and kids are really struggling right now. Here are the signs that can help, you know, identify what's going on. Noting a lot of Surgeon General stats, suspected suicide attempts are up 4% for boys, 51% for girls in the first part of 2021, according to the Surgeon General. So we are at a point where we're engaging in revisionist history. And as Bethany Mandel on Twitter has said, you know, maybe your first reaction is to say, oh, it's about time, welcome aboard. No. This is something where it is way too serious to be like, congratulations. You have to remember what these people sowed and that they are the ones who they planted the seeds for where we are now.
A question for Holt would be, how are you guys going to try to square this urging for lockdowns and another economic shutdown and sort of pair that with what you guys were told in trying to play up the Biden economy with all the inflation and all these negative indicators in the economy? How are you going to square those? How are you going to square that, put that square peg into that round hole?
Right, exactly. How do you think that you have solved this problem? Other than you just trying to will it into existence, as Jen Psaki tried to do today by saying that we've saved Christmas and that is because President Biden recognized this challenge early, acted as an honest broker. Are you kidding me right now? You know, she cites a New York Times article, and a lot of people do this. They say everything's great, but then you actually dig into articles, you know, way down in paragraph, you know, 35 or whatever, just making up a number. Things aren't exactly as they are, especially in longer articles or longer report segments on these newscasts. They may bury kind of something in there.
Exactly. Well, we actually have some more COVID stuff that we noticed last night and yesterday in our Newsbusters reporting, but we'll get to that a little bit later when we have a brand new Night Crew news analyst, Kevin Tober, on in a little bit.
Well, let's bring him in. Well, you got one more thing?
I want to go over the Fredo moments. Before you forget the Fredo moments.
Oh,
okay. So we have a little bit of fun before we dive into the more serious topics again. So first off, for those of you who may not be may not remember where Fredo gets his nickname. There was a little bit of incident in 2019 where he threatened to throw some Trump supporters down a flight of stairs because they called him Fredo, which is a reference to Alfredo Corleone from the Godfather film series.
I'm your older brother, Mike, and I was stepped over.
That's the way Pop wanted it.
It ain't the way I wanted it. I can handle things. I'm smart. Not like everybody says. Like dumb. I'm smart, and I want respect.
Yes, the I'm smart. I can do things. No, Chris, you can't do things. You're Fredo. So. In a bit of a chronological order on Newsbusters here, I did a rundown. I went through every Chris Cuomo blog that we put up in the last year, and I sort of got it down to the dirty dozen, Curtis. But we're just going to look at a few of them. So first off on the list is it was like about a few days after the riot at the Capitol, and the media fervor about it was at its zenith, or close to it. And you actually had Chris and Don Lemon, who were the biggest purveyors and pushers of the Black Lives Matter and Antifa riots in the summer of 2020.
Along with Chuck Todd.
Yeah, exactly. You covered, I believe, Don Lemon's pushing of it, and then I covered Chris's pushing of it. And in this clip here, the two of them are going on about how essentially their riots were cooler than the Capitol riots and that they were more justified. Let's take a listen.
Listen, I'm glad you mentioned about being shot by cops, because you cannot compare this, and I'm sick of people comparing. You can't compare what happened this summer to what happened at the Capitol. It's two different things. One was built on people, on racial justice, on criminal justice, right? On reform, on police not beating up or not police treating people of color differently than they do whites. Okay, that is not a lie. Those are facts. Go look at them. What happened at the Capitol on Wednesday was built on a lie perpetrated by the president and the people who support him. So just on that merit, if you want to call it, it's not comparable. Those things are not comparable, so they should stop doing that and stop this whataboutism.
The truth is, as soon as somebody says to you, Don, when they are aware of what happened last week, but this summer, as soon as those words come out of their mouth, they do not care about what happened last week.
That's true.
Because they know everything that you're saying and I'm saying. They get that it's not apples to apples.
Yeah.
What it is a reflection of the truth of what is happening in this country, which is there are people who don't care, who don't like what was done, who don't believe the black people are justified. And it's why last week happened. And we can get angry, too.
Yep.
That's the truth.
Well,
and it is our problem.
A few days later, Chris actually complained that us as a country never, quote, never once stopped to honor, unquote, COVID victims,
which is kind of false. Co-quote of the year from Newsbusters is of David Shalian the night before the inauguration of Biden gathering rays of light, I guess, that David Shalian said were his outstretched arms to America. And I'll also add that it's not like we didn't do that last year as a country in churches and in our homes. Nope. It's not like we didn't do that at all, Chris. Okay. You must have missed that.
And then later on, a few months later, you had Chris sort of whining. This was actually after this segment here is after we discovered that his brother was giving his family preferential treatment for testing and treatments when COVID first hit New York. He was actually complaining that it was hard to find COVID vaccines for his in-laws. Let's take a listen.
When Christina was trying to get her parents a appointment for the vaccine, it was like NASA in my house. Everybody was on a laptop. Everybody was looking for a canceled appointment. Everybody was scrubbing all these different sites and stuff. Totally different now. Totally better. Got the Pfizer vaccine yesterday. Christina and I went. You may have seen me in the tabloids.
Okay, Chris, I'm sorry that your brother wasn't able to do everything for your family, use all the state's resources like he did the first time around. to secure special needs for your family. But that's not really so you really like the Cuomos were born with not just silver spoons in their mouths, golden spoons in their mouths. And this is just an example of his entitlement, thinking that his family should be able to just be willy-nilly go anywhere and find a vaccine.
It's interesting, Nick, that he thought he was able to get away with this. And for over a year, he was. But it's fun looking back at it now, knowing that he was eventually axed by all intents and purposes by a Me Too allegation from when he was at ABC News. People could say it had to do with his communication with his brother. But I think we all know the world in which we live in is agree or disagree with the tactics of it. The allegation came forward, and I really think, you know, if you'll be honest, Zucker is honest, that that's the kind of thing that would cause the network to move.
Yep. And one of Chris's biggest shticks is that he's the tough guy. He likes to brag that he does martial arts, and Tucker Carlson plays all the videos of him lifting the weights, the roid raging gorilla in the room. But again, he's definitely a guy who likes to talk a big game, probably doesn't actually have a big game. And here's a clip of him, a little bit of that brushing off on Don Lemon, where the two of them were actually joking around and sort of fantasizing about beating up a maskless man on the subway.
I saw this guy, this video of this guy, you know, here in New York City, talking about going after this woman on a train, saying, take off your mask on the subway.
Yeah. It's I believe about in freedom.
I believe in freedom. She's free to put on her face whatever the hell she wants.
I know. I can't believe in a New York City subway that guy didn't get tuned up, by the way. I'm glad he didn't. I know that wouldn't be the best of us. But I got to tell you.
He might have if I had been on there. I'm not kidding.
I was getting ready for the Toby and Nwigwe song, Try Jesus. You ever hear that song?
Try Jesus, don't try me.
Because I throw hands.
Yeah, I throw hands. But as I always say, play lotto. Don't play me.
Whoa, guys, chill. He's not wearing a mask. Sure, he's being a jerk. But you don't want to get into fisticuffs, because he actually probably could take Chris. So a little bit further on, a little bit later in the year here, we had Bill Maher. So some of the best Fredo moments are the ones where he actually proves how dumb he is. And one of the best moments of the year was when he had Bill Maher on, family friend, chatting away. Because as a Cuomo, his family has all these very convenient friendships with a lot of big name people. And you had Bill Maher on and actually had to school Chris on critical race theory and how it's being applied in schools.
If when you say critical race theory, again, this is the binary situation we always find ourselves in this country. If you say that on MSNBC, people think that's a great thing because they're finally teaching an honest history of racism in this country, which I know no one who is against that. I'm certainly not against that. I think, you know, I remember what my education was with American history. We learned about the Civil War. I mean, they mentioned racism. We understood slavery and Lincoln and blah, blah, blah. But they didn't really go into it any more than Gone with the Wind goes into it. It was there, but you didn't feel it viscerally. Now we're doing that, and I think that's a good thing. People should understand that. That's different than teaching that racism is the essence of America. That's what people get upset about. Or involving children who are probably not old enough or sophisticated enough to understand this very complicated issue with a very complicated history.
And you actually had Chris doing a little bit of projecting some of his ignorance, about CRT and his hatred for like the parents that are standing up against it. And Maher had to like tell him, like, no, this is how students are being divided racially in school.
So it's that you have families, and we saw this resonate in Virginia. And I have people on all the time who reject this premise, but we just saw it play out, so it must be real to a lot of people, which is you want to make white kids feel badly about what happened before them and that their lives should be a function of making up for it. And I don't want that put on my kid.
Yes, kids are taught and sometimes separated into groups, oppressor and oppressed. again, does a kid even know what those words mean? Would they gravitate toward that if you hadn't told them? I mean, you're taking something that was getting better, race relations in America, and we, I think everyone recognizes, everyone right-thinking in my view, that still a lot of work needs to be done. Remedial efforts need to be taken still. Racism is part of America. But I did a thing one night about progressophobia, which is a term Steven Pinker coined, which means somehow liberals got afraid to acknowledge progress. You know, it's two thoughts in your head at the same time. You can acknowledge that we have made great progress on all the social issues. And yet there is still more work to be done. We're not saying mission accomplished. It's just saying let's live in the year we're living in. You can't come up with good solutions unless you're realistic about what the problem is.
Omar, you know, for a liberal, he can find the right points on occasion, right?
Yeah, Glenn Greenwald, Bill Maher, Andrew Sullivan, just a few examples of classical. Barry Weiss is another one. Barry's fiance, Katie Hertz, I believe Katie Herzog is her name, or might be somebody else. But all those folks really hit the right notes when it comes to quote unquote cancel culture and actually being liberals, as in supporting classically liberal values of free speech and open debate. An amazing concept, and it's sad that it's in short supply on the side that's named after such values, but again, here we are.
So, and for our final moment that we're going to do in this roundup, really quick, no audio for it, but his firing, it happened so fast. On November 30th, he was suspended indefinitely. And then just a few days later on December 4th, I was on a vacation and I get a frantic call from Curtis letting me know that Fredo was fired. I actually missed the call when a friend was handing me the phone. And I was telling you the story last night and I picked up the phone and immediately you were telling me about it and I said he was fired. And the friends that I was with thought I was talking about I was getting fired.
Yes, I fired Nick. Early Saturday night at like, what was it, 5:09 p.m. when the firing came down. Yeah, yes, I am that kind of person.
Yeah. So I was at a friend's place. We were all hanging out in the kitchen. Food just arrived and we were about to head out to go someplace else. And I get this frantic call from Curtis telling me, it just happened.
Dude, it happened.
Write me something real fast. And then I ended up writing out like a few paragraphs and Curtis and I co-authored the Newsbusters piece on his firing. And like I say in my roundup here, it happened so incredibly fast and he's just disappeared like dust in the wind. He got Thanos snapped.
Yeah, it just happened. He just went away. Imagine that. No, there's no rhyme or reason for doing this on an early Saturday night. No.
Oh, yeah, especially when, like, the new information comes out and then you don't say what the new information is.
We had to do something right away. Okay, couldn't wait till Monday. We got to do it right now when no one's watching cable or really much of anything other than sports.
Except for us at Newsbusters, we're always on.
I believe it was in the middle of the SEC championship game, so a lot of people that our sports and politics people like myself were watching that instead.
Mm-hmm. But, and us on Newsbusters, we're always on Fredo watch, making sure, seeing what he's up to, what underhanded things and dastardly deeds the Cuomos are cooking up. But we're going to be back in just a moment with Kevin, talk about his first couple of days here. And he's here with us right now. Okay. We got the mic up and running. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Very good. Thanks.
It's great to be back.
Yes, you are back on the podcast. You're a podcast guest who is now full time with us. It's very exciting. So just overall, real quick, just give us a quick answer about how your first week plus is gone, because you were doing kind of half days with us training your friend to take over for you in development. But now, how's your first couple days of full-time work been?
It's going really well. It's a lot. In some ways, it's the same. In some ways, it's different than as being an intern at Newsbusters. A lot more of a say of what blogs you can write and more a little freedom in that way.
You got to make some decisions. Yeah, I was going to say, you got to make some decisions.
Much work quickly.
Yeah, you're going to make decisions quickly. And as I've said before, you're finally part of the family.
Yes.
Since we were just talked about Fredo and the Godfather, we're now the family with a capital T and a capital F.
Yes.
Also getting used to those new nighttime hours.
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, it's not as much of an adjustment as I thought.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I was gonna say, well, I said on Twitter last night, this is your new night team. It's very exciting, and they'll be great. It'll be great.
So one of your first blogs, full-time blogs on Monday, you covered about the network sort of like jumping on to Joe Manchin because of Build Back Better.
Yep. Yeah, so I mean, you know, in the night now, every evening I watch the evening newscasts, NBC, ABC, CBS, and I look for their biases. Either they're biased by omission or commission. Sometimes we try to contrast between the networks, and other times we'll just do a roundup of the coverage of all three. Mm-hmm. So last night, the networks covered the Biden presser, and NBC shockingly actually mentioned Biden's COVID testing failures.
Oh, yeah, yep. We'll get on to that.
Yeah. Yep. So, I wrote up a blog of how NBC spent a minute and 11 seconds on the Biden administration downplaying the COVID testing, sending COVID tests to people, and then they kind of played the...
Yeah, Kirsch, because that was something from the Psaki show.
And for the first time, sending home rapid tests to anyone who wants one, something the White House appeared to discount only 2 weeks ago.
Then what happens if every American has one test? How much does that cost? And then what happens after that?
Jen Psaki admitting regret.
And should I have included that additional context again in that answer? Yes. Going back, I wish I would have done that.
That was December 6th, yep. When she was asked about that by none other than NPR's Mara Liasson. So your tax dollars at NPR for like a few fleeting seconds actually went somewhere.
Yep. Yeah. And then part of the blog was, you know, CBS ignoring that whole thing. They only talked about it for 16 seconds and even mentioned Biden's failures. It's kind of talked about his plan going forward, not so much his past failures.
Yeah, they didn't mention how basically Psaki was making fun of the idea of sending people, like what Mara led asked about, which was just like, oh, do you want, like, Psaki just mocking is like, do you want us to send COVID? Like, do you know how much that would cost? Like, what kind of logistics? That were just like mocking the idea. And then a few 2 weeks later, it's like, that's the official White House plan.
Right. It was very similar to Hillary Clinton's joke when asked about her server, wipe the server. And she was like with a cloth or something. You think you're being clever, but they're not. Again, liberals, a lot of them aren't very good at humor. And to show that our, you know, stories matter and they're not just going out into the wilderness like Joe Biden yelling at clouds. It actually matters because the very next morning, today, Wednesday, on CBS Mornings, we had Ed O'Keefe's report, almost like he had completely scrapped his script from the night before and mentioned previous criticism. Now, he didn't play the clip with Mara Liasson and Jen Psaki, but he pointed to these concerns that people are raising across the spectrum, public health experts that normally would be with the administration that are saying that you guys have really caught flat-footed on this.
Yeah, and Ed O'Keefe in general, like during the election, he was definitely a guy who was a lot of people were sort of mocking his doting reports about Biden, sort of like, oh, so you're auditioning to be in the press shop, clearly. So he sort of dits back into that last night, but then when everybody is sort of just like obviously pointing out the hypocrisy of the press corps or the press room or the press shop for Biden in mocking the plan, he sort of backpedaled.
Right, exactly.
So the other thing that you had last night, Kevin, was speaking with the Manchin and the GOP there and the Build Back Better is they were talking about the GOP and Manchin like starving little children.
Yeah. Yeah, that was another big one from last night. NBC ran a story about how Republicans and Joe Manchin are heartless for killing the extension of the child tax credit. No, I mean, never mind how it was the Democrats who put it in with the controversial Build Back Better bill.
Exactly.
So if it's so important, why would you include it within something you know is controversial?
Yeah, it's like they basically they it's almost like they put the child tax credit in there as sort of like a to play this move of, oh, you shot down the bill, so you want to starve children. But the bill itself is just so poisonous that it was just a poison pill for that bill and like all these other things that they say are popular. It's like, okay, if you say they're popular, strip them out and pass them one at a time.
Yeah.
Because you, in theory, would have the support for all those things. And they're just sort of cramming it in there to play to their base and to try to hold it over Republicans later.
Right. You know, guys, I think the overarching point here is really quite simple. It's yet another example of where the liberal media are telling us that their friends and they themselves know better than the rest of us. They know better than you.
But let me say to those people, because all of my colleagues, we represent these people. I have for over 30 years represented my constituents. I know what their needs are. I listen to them.
They know better than all of you together. And Joe Manchin doesn't know what's good for his constituents, the people that elected him, and the other senator, Shelley Moore Capito. You know, you guys don't know what's good for you. There are these great things. If only you were smart enough to know what's in the bills, you would accept that instead of come to your own conclusion, which for many people is this bill is really large. Therefore, I don't think we should do it because it's so much money being pumped into the economy.
And the other side of the, like, that Joe Manchin doesn't know what's good for his constituents is that those other places think they know what's good for West Virginians, and that they keep putting it on Manchin, and they'll say stuff like, oh, this is terrible that one man has all this power to kill a bill. It's like, no, it's him and 49 other people. It's like, right. They try to pretend the Republicans don't exist, and that Manchin and Sinema are the only, like, are like the harbingers of this. And that's why you're seeing like these really, sort of anti-democracy sort of pushes on the left to like redo the Senate so that way it's also representative instead of just two per state, because you'll be like, oh, he represents so many less people than other like the senators for like California and New York. It's like, no, that's how the system is made so that these regions have equal representation.
Right. And the gridlock is kind of supposed to be this way. I talked about this on OAN this week, where like that's the geniusness of the founders. The founders were brilliant in setting up a system this way. You know, the system that the left is calling for is in the House of Representatives, and the Senate kind of balances that out, because these people forget that, like, for every state like West Virginia they complain about, there's a small blue state like Delaware, Connecticut, and Rhode Island that helps Democrats get to their 50 seats. So those are automatic blue seats for them.
Mm-hmm.
Hawaii's another one, but yet they don't like when small red states have representation in the Senate. They just don't have a problem with blue. And you know what's crazy about all of this is, where is Joe Biden from? Delaware.
Yep.
So you're saying that Joe Biden's own state should be of little relevance on the political stage, which is really interesting.
It is.
Oh yeah. And
well, Kevin, I want to mention real quick here your other piece this week that was pretty humorous. I encourage people to go find it at Newsbusters. John Heilman filling in for Nicole Wallace and Eddie Glaude. They had some weird, well, not weird, but it's very predictable, so I take that back, thoughts about why people are dying of COVID right now.
Yeah, so they... it's hilarious. Yeah, so Heilman was in filling in for Nicole Wallace, and he... kind of gave Biden a pass on that, on the whole COVID thing. And then, so I'm like, all right, well, this is ridiculous. I'm like, there's got to be some way, there's got to be, back when Trump was president, he had to have said something dumb about, like, blaming Trump for COVID at the time. So I did a little bit of digging on our Newsbusters website, our Snapstream archive and whatnot. And lo and behold, I found a clip of him on the same exact show, this time as a guest for Nicole Wallace. And he said that Trump was responsible for what, at the time, this was like March of 2020, so the pandemic was just beginning. And keep in mind, we knew very little at the time about COVID. So you could argue that Trump could have had a little more of a benefit of the doubt than Biden now. Mm-hmm. But Biden, he blamed Trump and said that he's responsible for the death of tens of thousands of people.
We know the president is not responsible for this. He didn't cause Omicron, and they're dealing with this pandemic, which is metastasizing and mutating every minute that it's on planet Earth. It's also the case that we know that presidents get blamed for things that they don't deserve to get blamed for. They get praised for things they don't deserve to get praised for. It's just how politics works.
And the reality is that in that period, in that lost 2 months, really, in January and February, the response, what Donald Trump did and he directed his government to do in that period was woefully inadequate to the task of getting ready for this virus, which was about to hit the country, that he knew was about to hit the country, mm-hmm. that he was being told by people around him was about to hit the country. The consequences were laid out for him vividly by people like Peter Navarro and others. And yet the reaction was incompetent and inadequate. And I don't think it's actually an overstatement mm-hmm. to say that Donald Trump there are tens of thousands of people who will die in the country, or have some of them have already died. More are still going to die mm-hmm. because of Donald Trump's incompetence and lack of leadership.
John.
Yeah.
John, in 2020, it came out of nowhere.
Yeah. China did this to us, bud. This is China's fault. It's still China's fault. I've seen people on Twitter the last couple of days mention this about Omicron. It's like, yeah, this is a new variant, but guess what? It's still China's fault. So the idea to bring Trump back into this is so desperate and pathetic. Considering what he said about boosters, he came out and got booed by his own audience for saying that you should get boosted, you know, if that's what you want to do, and that we should not allow the left to co-opt the vaccines and Operation Warp Speed for their own benefit and play into their game that it is a partisan issue.
And further on that too is when they rail against the people that are unvaxxed for whatever reasons that they have with their in their lives, they keep saying it's like, oh, they keep saying like, oh, they're the reason we keep getting all these variants that are spreading across the globe. Delta started in India. Omicron started in South Africa. A little bit, California had their own variant for a little bit, but that ended up getting crowded out by Delta.
There was a British variant, I think,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, like and the California one was really before we even got vaccine. So they're claiming that American unvaccinated are the reasons we're getting these variants is ridiculous.
Exactly.
100%.
Yeah, so Kevin, what are some things that you're really looking forward to or kind of thinking the media will be doing here in the next, I don't know, week or so that you'll be looking for?
I'm looking for, well, the Sunday shows and then the rest of this week at how the media covers the ongoing Omicron surge, as well as the continued freak out over Manchin tanking Build Back Better. It's always fun to watch them freak out.
Yeah, exactly. And I should just add, we're coming up obviously on the first anniversary of January 6th.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Reporters in the briefing room are then asking Jen Psaki here and there. Guy with Reuters, Trevor Honeycutt, today asked Jen Psaki about what is he going to do to commemorate it. Bloomberg's Nancy Cook did that last week. I believe there may have been a few others that. They're very excited about this. Very excited for something that apparently was objectively was very, very, very bad. Very dark day for the country. But it was like fun for anyway. Never mind.
Yeah,
the logic was so contorted here. But so we've got so many big stories here, Nick, and you know, it was gonna be a fun time. You know, no sleep. Mm-hmm. For all of us here, as the three of us will be working along with boss Tim Graham to keep the website moving. Kevin, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yep. And the skeleton crew will be working for the rest of the year, and we'll see you back next week. I believe Tim will be back.
We'll find out. We'll all find out together.
Okay, very good. And we'll see you. And as Tim does say, come to Newsbusters once, twice, 24 times a day.